Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Hi there, welcome back, and I'd like to welcome back a returning guest, and you know what I say about returning guests. Yes, it is true. If they come back, they're good. And Ann Turgeson is our guest today. She's a journalist for the Wall Street Journal. And she has written a lot of great stuff that we catch in the Wall Street Journal that we really enjoy following her work. And several things caught our attention. When I say our, that means Beth Muthart, my radio producer, said, hey, you know, we need to get Ann back on because she's really good. And everybody liked her last interview with you, David. And she's got some good stuff. So that's what we're doing today. And I'm pleased to bring Ann back to the program. Hi, Ann. How you doing?
I'm fine, thanks.
All right. Listen, I know you're very busy, so I promised Ann we'd make this a fast half-hour show as opposed to a long one. So that means we need to dive right in. And I love some of the things you've written here recently with the Wall Street Journal, and so much to talk about, so we'll try to get through all of it. First is the change, of course, in interest rates. Everybody was bracing for this, and it was kind of like it was almost like something that everybody wanted to have happen, but not really. And it's like, finally, we got it out of our system, and we had this whopping 0.25 Fed increase in the short-term rates. But now, the other side of that is people are thinking, okay, well, how does this affect my portfolio? How does this affect some of the strategies? And you had written an article back at the end of 2015 talking about how funds, some of the mutual funds, target date funds, are looking to cut risk. And they, you know, a lot of them have been doing that with bonds. So are we seeing a shift from your perspective, the perch you're sitting on of what funds are doing to really address risk in a rising interest rate environment?
Some of them are target date funds for, I focused this article on target date funds for people who are either in or very close to retirement because I don't know if you recall, but back in 2008 when the financial crisis hit, those target date funds, you know, again, for people about to retire, they lost on average something like 35%.
This was
shocking to people who
were
in these funds because I think, first of all, the funds are misunderstood. They're sort of thought to be maybe low-risk funds, when in fact what they really are is diversified, investment portfolios. So people were surprised, but there also were, you know, certain Congress had hearings, and there were allegations that some of the funds didn't manage the risk profiles well. Well, you know, so my question was, well, okay, in the wake of 2008, what's happened to these portfolios? Are they still as exposed to the stocks as they were? And the answer is no, they're not. I think on average, their allocations to stocks have decreased to, I think, 42% versus 50%, which is where they were in 08. But the flip side of that is that they're more exposed to bonds. So when you have a situation where interest rates are you know, heading higher, then that does pose some risk to some of these very bond-heavy portfolios because, you know, when interest rates rise, bond prices fall, or the prices of existing bonds fall.
Yeah, and the longer that bond, and our friends over at Morningstar did an analysis for every 1% increase in interest rates, a 10-year bond on average will drop by 10% in value. Now we're talking, as you said, Ann, about price. You hold it at maturity, and the issuer's there. You get your full face amount of your bond back, even if interest rates have gone up. But for a lot of these funds you're talking about, they're holding a big basket of bonds and don't necessarily hold them to maturity.
No, they don't. I mean, they generally don't. They'll have bond funds, which, you know, generally are portfolios of bonds that get kind of moved in and out. So, these funds are exposed to interest rate risk, and some of the funds have taken steps to try to kind of manage that risk or lessen that risk. Not all the funds. A lot of, particularly, you know, I spoke to Vanguard, and they're an index. They have an index fund approach, and their approach is to just hold what's in the index. So, if the index is very exposed to interest rate risk, then the Vanguard fund is going to be too. I mean, and I'm not picking on Vanguard. I'm just saying that there's different approaches.
It's a good example. Well, I mean, it's a straitjacket. Let's just be honest. I mean, if you're going to, if your prospectus says and your stated investment objective is to mirror that benchmark, and that benchmark is a bond index, and you know that you've got no place to go unless you know you're going to shut the fund down. I mean, that is what it is.
Right, and Vanguard makes the point, which is a good point, that you know we don't know. I mean, we think interest rates are rising.
I'm not so sure.
We can't say that, you know, something isn't going to happen in the market that's actually going to cause interest rates to fall instead of rise. Even though the Fed might be raising interest rates, that doesn't mean that the market is going to follow through and also raise interest rates. And so, you know, their point of view is, you know, since we don't know what's going to happen, we just hold the index.
Yeah. Well, now that's an outstanding point, and that and it's something that a lot of people really don't understand when they hear that rates are being raised by the Fed. You know, they don't really understand that is a specific rate, and it's really the short-term rate.
Yeah.
And you are so right about the market dictating, really the market dictates long-term rates.
Right.
And we may see an inversion, we may see a flattening of the, you know, the curve and all of that. But the thing that's remarkable and very interesting to me, and this is the kind of thing I think about driving down the road, and I know this is going to be really sad to admit, but I think about, you know, short-term rates being raised by the Fed, and then with their, so to speak, with their left hand, but then their right hand, they may do more quantitative easing and suppress the long-term rate, and the market may join them in dropping long-term rates. So, you know, you're right. We don't know. And I've got four crystal balls in my office, and not one of them work. So we don't know what rates are going to do, even though we've heard all this about successive rate increases happening in 2016.
Right, exactly. So the target date funds, I mean, I think Vanguard's point is that the target date funds that are trying to manage this risk, you know, have a chance of being wrong. So it sounds
imagine
good.
That,
it sounds
right?
Like, it sounds like let's avoid, you know, our portfolio getting hit by falling prices due to rising interest rates, but you know you could just be making the wrong bet. So
very, very well put. Ann Turgeson, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, journalist at the Wall Street Journal, and a lot of great stuff. You can go to their website. It's wsj.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, let's grab a break. We'll come right back with Ann. Stay right there.
Hello, this is Brenda Campbell, General Manager at Volusia Memorial Funeral Home and Cemetery, a Digny Memorial provider. We are committed to service beyond expectation, before, during, and after the service. To that end, we offer a service guarantee. If there's anything we can do to meet your individual needs, please let us know and we'll take care of it immediately. This is another way we offer great level of professionalism in working with our families. We can be reached at 386-673-5373 or our website, VolusiaMemorialFunerals.com. Volusia Memorial Funeral Home in Port Orange and Ormond Beach. Life well celebrated.
These are challenging times for investors. The stock market is volatile, with 10% drops a common historical occurrence. Is your financial portfolio prepared for such a correction? What about inflation? What's your plan when that gallon of milk or gallon of gasoline costs $16? And what about interest rates? Did you know that a 10-year bond could drop 10% if interest rates rose just 1%? What's your plan for that? Holland Financial has all the answers to questions like these and practical steps to help you hedge against these negative events. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com to schedule your one-on-one meeting with David Holland.
Hey, we're back. Ann Turgeson on the line, journalist for the Wall Street Journal and WSJ.com. You can go take a look at all of Ann's great work, and she just continues to pop out columns and blogs and articles. They're all the same now with this technological world we're in, but she keeps putting them out, and we're glad she's doing that. And I wanted to echo and kind of take the next step with regard to interest rates and the Fed finally acting. You know, I know that you talk to a lot of financial experts, Anne, about what they're doing and how they're positioning, you know, clients and their portfolios. Are you seeing and hearing any significant shift in strategies out there that people are taking with managing money for people?
Well, you know, I think it varies by financial
sure.
advisor. So I think in general these days, when people get all concerned about the markets, a big role that financial advisors have is just telling people really not to kind of flip out, not to, you know, undo a financial plan that that they have in place.
Because
one of the worst things that you can do is to just bail out of stocks at the point when stocks are about to hit the bottom and maybe rebound, so
exactly.
that you kind of lock in your losses that way. So there's a lot of that. When calling around, I mean, some advisors are taking steps to do things to reduce some aspects of bond market risk or stock market risk.
Right.
But I think in general, most of them are trying to just convince investors that panic really doesn't serve them well in the long run.
35% of the years since 1960 have a 5-10% correction.
Oh, good to know.
I just wrote a column for that, and it's going in the paper here shortly. But the thing that is so easy to forget, and this is part of our counsel in my firm, and what we remind our clients, is say, look, we understand it's so easy to forget. Number one, you have a financial plan. Number mm-hmm. two, it's so easy to forget that you have a considerable amount of money that is not in the market and it's in other things that we've done for you. And number three, it's so easy to forget that the market does this, and what is exceptional would be a very long bull market, which we have had from time to time, where there is no correction. That is what is rare. That is what's exceptional. These 5-10% pullbacks are normal. And now it's a small consolation when somebody opens their statement and they see a loss, but it is normal. And I think that many people just want to have somebody say to them, and that's that you're right, this is part of the advisor's job, it's okay. And just remember, we've got a plan for this. And the other thing, probably one of the most important things that I think an advisor can do for a client, is to make sure that they're not putting a person's money in the market that they're going to need within, say, 3 to 5 years, where they're going to need to go get that money and pull it, you know, that lump sum, take it all out. And also be very careful about, you know, devising a plan either by accident or on purpose that has the client pulling their income from a vacillating market.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, these are some things that, so if all those things are true, if the investors out there, the clients out there, if they are putting their money, investing it away to where they are not going to need to use that money in 3 to 5 years, then the market, it's okay. And also, if you haven't devised a plan where the income's coming from the market, then hey, a 10% pullback is just part of the deal. But if those two things aren't true, then danger, Will Robinson, danger.
Right. Well, these market corrections can be sort of tests for people too. I mean, if you know this kind of thing happens and you do absolutely panic and it's causing you a lot of emotional turmoil, well, that could be a sign that maybe you are too aggressive in your asset allocation for your long-term comfort, so that you might need to make some adjustments. And if you're going to scale back on stocks and, you know, add to your bond positions, then you're going to probably need to save more to get to your goal. So
that's well put. And you know what else is interesting about that, Anna? And it's an ironic thing, so you tell me if this makes sense, but you know, if somebody's deciding between having maybe a more growth portfolio versus something more balanced, and let's say they say, you know what, okay, I'm a little nervous, but I'll go with your recommendation that I need growth long term. But mm-hmm. if that's something they can't stick with,
right,
then the truth is they would have been better off with a balanced portfolio, even if that produces a long term lower return, because the growth portfolio will not serve them well if they can't stick with it.
Right, exactly.
Right.
And, when this happens, I mean, I know people myself who, you know, went to cash in 2008, and that was fine at the moment when the market was going down. But what really caused them problems was that they were so flipped out that they stayed in the cash, you know, for the next 2 years, and they missed the run-up, and then they decided that they were comfortable with stocks again at a point where stocks were more expensive, and they got in at a higher level. So that's what you really want to avoid. You want to be in a portfolio where the asset allocation is such that you're not, if you're of that sort of temperament, that you are, you're comfortable riding out the highs and lows because you have less in stocks. And again, that means that, you know, you're just going to have, your portfolio is not going to be positioned for growth, and you're going to have to adjust by saving more.
Well, and
less.
Yeah, your exactly. All your variables have to change. But you know what? There's a bit of bravado in our country that, oh well, you know, gosh, you're kind of a wimp if you can't stay in an aggressive portfolio. It's like there's this judgment, or even maybe we put it on ourselves. But there's this I don't know. Maybe it's just because of the television and the media and the Wall Street Journal report. Somebody reads it and go, golly, I should have more inner strength to withstand these market losses I'm seeing. And but you know what? If that's not you, there's no reason somebody should subject themselves. And I know so many people that they are just conservative and they say, I'm conservative, I can't be in the market, and they're happy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are people who are, you know, financial gurus. Like I'm thinking of Zvi Bodhi at Boston University. He's a finance professor there. And his whole sort of argument is that, you know, people shouldn't be riding the stock market up and down. They shouldn't be sort of gambling their futures there, whether they have the tolerance to do so or not. He says, you know, we should really be thinking in terms of securing our retirement in bond strategies, which is not a high growth formula. So his approach is you just say you save a lot more, you put it in bonds, and you've got this locked up. You know,
well, yeah, so. And there's another way of saying that is, you know, when I work with people, it's let's take no more risk than we need to accomplish your goals.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different paths to this. If you're just joining us, Ann Turgeson's our guest journalist for the Wall Street Journal, and we're very happy to have her returning as a guest. We'll take another short break, come back, talk about completely different subject, but very interesting. Ann wrote about this well, the 6 financial mistakes that people make when they retire abroad. Stay right there.
Hi, I'm Teresa Ram with the Volusia Flagler YMCA. Our YMCA has 6 locations to help your family reach their health and fitness goals. Kids who play sports at the Y learn more than just the game. The programs provide positive, fun activities that build athletic, social, and interpersonal skills, which lead to better behavior, healthier lifestyles, and even improved academic achievement. For more information on how your Y can help with your health and wellness goals, check out www.vfymca.org.
Done right, done on time, or it's free. Holland Tax and Accounting Services, a division of Holland Financial, holds the same values our clients have trusted for almost 20 years. We have the financial expertise that will help you manage your business and personal financial priorities year-round, not just during tax season. Whether you are an individual or a business, Holland Tax can accommodate your needs for tax planning and preparation. For your business or personal finances, rely on Holland Tax and Accounting Services to deliver personal and detailed attention. Call 386-671-7526 to have your taxes done right, done on time, or it's free.
Hey there, welcome back. Ann Turgeson on the line with us talking about some of the current writing she has. You can find over at Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com. And I wanted to turn, you know, to another very interesting area, Ann. This is the folks that retire abroad. And, you know, there's this allure of, you know, the novelty, the exotic, the often pitched or talked about lower cost of living, how you can, you know, live like a Saudi Arabian prince on, you know, your Social Security paycheck and, you know, have, you know, the pool boy take care of your pool and somebody else is serving you drinks and it's just you're laying around in a hammock all day and it's just life's good.
Right.
but there's some, Beth said that sounds good to her. So, but there are some things that people can mess this up thinking, you know, I don't want to be too, I don't know, opinionated about this, but sometimes people think they're a little more clever than they really are, you know, thinking that they've got this figured out, but there's some mistakes that you've really honed in on here that I think are very important. So I'd like to go through them with you that really can cause some serious problems for people.
Yeah, sure. I think you're right. This is a dream a lot of people have. And when we run articles about retiring in different destinations abroad, those articles are hugely popular,
sure.
And it just shows that people love this idea. But, you know, executing on the reality can be a little bit more kind of difficult sometimes. And you don't want to get to your new home, you know, your new country of residence, and find out that you're cut off from some of your U.S. banking or financial services options.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that really is kind of crazy and funny and sad at the same time is we hear people wanting to, you know, put their money offshore somewhere. And I know you're not specifically talking about this, but I can't help but talk about it. And it's that people go in and go, I'm going to put this money over in this island and I'll be able to avoid taxes or avoid Uncle Sam this, Uncle Boyd, Uncle Sam that. you know, if Uncle Sam can't get to it or can't tax it or can't do anything about it, then when you show up and you say, hi, I'm here for my account, they say, we don't have an account for you. They can't help you.
Yeah. You have to be really careful.
You have to be really careful.
Yeah.
So what are some of the big ones? Number one, I know that if somebody is going to reside abroad, they still, you know, they don't want to take everything and go. They still need to hold accounts in the United States, don't they?
Right. I mean, you really shouldn't liquidate most of your accounts in the United States. I mean, for one thing, if you take all your money out of a retirement account, you're going to owe a huge amount of income tax on the distribution. So just from a tax planning perspective, that would not be a wise thing to do. You can't necessarily, you really can't, it's very hard to roll over your U.S. retirement account money to, you know, accounts in foreign countries that would have comparable tax treatment. So just don't even go there. Just leave your retirement accounts in the United States. You should really be leaving a bank account in the United States, a credit card account in the United States. And you should really think in terms of having the United States be your base of financial operations. You can periodically transfer money from your retirement accounts to your bank account and then, you know, have it wired abroad or use credit cards that, you know, that accomplish the same thing. But you really should be leaving most of your money here. I mean, for one thing, like I said, there are tax reasons to leave your money here. In other words,
right.
You don't want to trigger a tax bill by liquidating any
or
of
double
accounts.
Taxation, right?
Yeah, well, and before I even get to that, the other thing is that a lot of American financial services firms have like significantly lower fees than what you'll find, say, in foreign banks. So, you know, you could really do yourself some harm financially by trying to move your base of operations to another country without at least first doing a lot of research to find out what those accounts would entail.
Well put, Anne. If it's not broken, don't try to fix it. I mean, you know, go and play in the sand, but leave your investment accounts right here with me. We'll watch them. We'll keep doing what we've done for the last 5 or 10 years and go play. And we can send you your check or direct deposit wherever you want to go.
Right.
Right? Something to be said with sticking with what works.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And the other issue too, so before you go, you really need to find out whether the companies that you're dealing with in the United States, whether it's, you know, Fidelity, Vanguard, whoever has your retirement accounts, you want to find out what their policies are on customers abroad, because in a lot of cases these firms will allow you to maintain an existing account, but they're not going to want to open a new account with somebody who's living in another country. So that again argues for, you know, keep your existing accounts.
Right. That all emanates out of the anti-money laundering and all of that bad stuff that these companies have to keep track of, and they really, you know, they're on guard and they just don't want to have to deal with people because of the money laundering and tax evasion.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's not like they would suspect you necessarily, but just for compliance reasons, it's often easier for them to deny people who live abroad without really having any specific suspicion. So you don't want to kind of fall prey to that if you are living abroad and you decide, oh, gee, I made a mistake. I need to you know, have a United States account. Well, you know, at that point, you may face a situation where you can't get one.
Well, they've got to manage their risks, and you know, it's like seeing a 16-year-old in a Ferrari, and the police is behind him. I think he's going to probably follow him for a few minutes and make sure. I mean, they've got to look at the risks that they are facing. But so we've got those issues, and then I know that the other one that we started to get to, Anne, is taxation. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be some of these tax treaties with the U.S. that may or may not work to allow you to avoid, you know, the double taxation on your earnings?
Yeah. And this is a really complicated area. So before you go, you know, if you pick a destination, you have a country in mind, you might want to investigate whether that country has a tax treaty with the United States, and if so, what it says. Even if the country has a tax treaty with the United States, it doesn't mean that you're not going to pay tax to both countries. It's a little complicated, but how it would work is, you know, if there's, say, a 20% capital gains tax rate in the United States and there's a 10% capital gains tax rate in the country that you move to, effectively you might owe the first 10%. If you sell stock at a profit and you realize a capital gain, you might effectively owe the first 10% of your gain as a tax to your new country. But then, because Uncle Sam's capital gains tax rate is higher, you would owe the next 10% up to the the U.S. tax rate to the United States. So you mm-hmm. could end up having situations where you owe tax in both directions.
Right.
People who might move abroad, and they might say, oh, gee, you know, I'm moving to a country without a capital gains tax rate. How great for me. I can save all that. Well, no. You still have to file a U.S. tax return. And if you do something that triggers a tax under the U.S. system, you're still going to owe some, you know, potentially you're still going to owe some tax to the United States. It just depends on what the tax situation is in the foreign country and whether, you know, they have the same tax system as we do.
Well, we have...
It's a little complicated,
yeah,
but you basically want to make sure you budget.
Yeah, and very complicated, and the United States has global relationships. We, you know, let's just, you know, there's a reason why the United States is often referred to as one of the most powerful or the most powerful country in the world, because we've got these treaties and relationships, and there are not many places you can hide. And usually people that try it regret it. And, you know, that goes to another important point, not just taxes, but when people start to have a larger amount of money, as you start to move money offshore as part of this, again, this residing in another country, if you get more than, what, is it $10,000 in a foreign account, you've got to report that, right?
You do, and there's these rules that I think have existed for some time, but they've only recently kind of been enforced. And again, this is sort of part of an effort on the part of the U.S. government to avoid tax evasion. But there are these reporting requirements. First of all, you have to file U.S. tax returns. So, you know, don't make the mistake of saying, hey, I'm living here in Costa Rica, I don't owe anything to the U.S. government. No, no, no.
Right.
You still have to file your tax returns. And then, secondly, if you do have foreign financial accounts with a balance that exceeds $10,000 at any time during the year, you have to file an additional form with the Treasury Department. It's called an FBAR. And if you fail to file that, the penalties can be really steep. So, you know, you just have to make sure you know the rules. It's not a hard form to file.
So not all beaches and sunshine.
Time. Yeah, but if you're not aware of these rules, you can get kind of fouled up in penalties that will drive you crazy. So.
And they'll get it. I mean, that's why they have because of these relationships. It's not like you say, well, they can't do anything to me. I'm over here. What are they going to do? They can get to your account. They can, and if you're getting Social Security, they just flip a little switch and turn that off. So, and I even heard, Ann, that they're building the new USSS Treasury, and it's going to be a battleship that they're going to park off the coast of... No, I'm kidding. But it's, you know, they will find you, and they will get it. So,
well, there's also a rule, I think it's going into effect this year, that says that foreign financial institutions mm-hmm. have to disclose
exactly
you know, what you owe there. So there is a way that they can find out, like, hey, interesting, he's got an account in this country, but we haven't heard from him.
Exactly. Well,
yeah.
I tell you what, Ann, we will have mm-hmm. to take it up another time. We're out of time. Ann Turgeson, our lively guest from the Wall Street Journal. She's a journalist with them, and go to WSJ.com for more of her articles. And Ann, I thank you for making some time for us. I enjoyed having you on the program.
All right. Thanks so much for having me.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.